I'm a simple man. Don't need much. The only thing I ask for from time to time is a cold beer and a nice, big, beautiful pair of boobs to rub my face in. But sometimes, life as a midnight rider gets lonely. And the moon gets light, and the wolves are howling through the hills. I put on my Bro History podcast. It's the best goddamn podcast in the world. They talk about history, culture, geopolitics, everything that you'd want to talk about in this lonely, lonely world. Make sure you like and subscribe it, or just go on the win.
Welcome to BrewHistory.com.
Hi, Danny.
Yo, yo, yo. What's good?
What's going on, man?
Chilling, man. How about you?
I'm doing well. So what we're talking about planes today. And I'll be completely honest. I mean, I think we should go back a little bit, probably mark this part as a place where we shouldn't start off in terms of content. But I guess the story that we have, everyone, the entire world has been following right now, is probably the biggest story in international news. Still seems to be what's going on with Khashoggi. Obviously,
that's right.
Journalists, and you know, I've been covering it. We've been covering it. Even Judah has been contributing on this as well. It's a pretty strange story, I think, for many people, but for people who have been Saudi watchers and people who have been Saudi alarmists, like myself, it's really no big surprise. And people are like me are having almost kind of like a perplexed feeling on it, how people are surprised that the Saudis killed a journalist.
Right. I mean, it's not a surprise, at least not in my opinion, but we might have the same opinion on this. So, I think it's interesting that we bring this back up, because not too long ago, you did an episode on your own, and, you know, you kind of cautioned everyone to like not jump to conclusions. Like, we don't know what happened exactly. But I even think that you had your suspicions that, you know, this was definitely like an inside job. Would you agree with that?
Well, what do you mean? We don't know what it was yet. Like, do you mean that I was doubting if the Saudis killed them or not?
I guess maybe we'd have to go back and review it. Maybe we can even put in a quote from that exact podcast. But, you know, you exercise some caution. And I think that, we didn't know all the details then. We didn't know who was up to it. Of course, everyone had their suspicions, but now we pretty much know. You know, the Saudis outed themselves. They said, yep, he died. He died in a fight in the consulate, which is super hard to believe. Maybe we could just talk about that for a bit, you know, about that premise. So they've gone from, it didn't happen, he didn't die here, we don't know where he is, to, yeah, he died in the consulate, but he died in a fight. What do you think of that?
So let me just clear something up real quick. So I never doubted that the Saudis killed him. I always suspected that. And as soon as he died, it was obviously the Saudis killed him. It was an inside job. The point I was trying to make in a previous episode was, we don't know the reason why he was killed. That's what I'm saying. He is a very, very, I think people were jumping to the conclusion that he was just a dissident, and that's why the Saudis killed him. Like, he was just your standard dissident who was criticizing MBS and criticizing, well, became an eventual critic of the war in Yemen. He was actually very pro-war Yemen in like 2015, 2016. I mean, the guy was a Saudi nationalist his entire life. What I was saying was that we don't know why he was killed. It's some inside Saudi type stuff. Like no one's ever really going to know the true and real reasons why he got into a fist fight with a bunch of Saudi special ops forces.
I mean, a fist fight with one man versus 15 isn't a fist fight. That's a jumping.
No, he went there swinging. He went there swinging and raging. This 60-year-old Washington Post journalist.
Yeah. Man, it's fucked up, dude.
Khashoggi was, you just got to look at who he was and his close relationship with the inner works and, like, you know, the Saudi media and the Saudi royal family. He was an Osama bin Laden handler in the '80s. So he was an Al Qaeda handler in the '80s. Like, he followed him around and that romanticized trip when Osama bin Laden was fighting with the Mujahideen against the Soviets.
Right.
He was a huge Saudi nationalist. He was an advisor for Prince Turkmen, who was the Council of Intelligence or head of intelligence. He was a very high ranking or not high ranking because he wasn't officially part of the government. He was a journalist, but he was very intertwined in the royal family and its inner politics. So my suspicion, and it was then, was that he was killed for some type of inner Saudi reason. Can you still hear me right now?
Yeah, I can hear you just fine.
Okay, my computer just like did a weird thingy. But yeah, my conclusion was that he was killed for something that goes way further than just being your typical dissident.
The
Saudis killed one of their their minority leaders, like minority leader, not as in a political party, minority leader as in a actual religious minority leader, a Shiite leader.
Yeah, we're not talking about Nancy Pelosi.
Not talking about Republicans versus Democrats. We're talking about an actual marginalized group. The Shiites in Saudi Arabia are what would be in any standard a marginalized group. When the Saudis had this guy publicly executed, Khashoggi defended it. Khashoggi has been a strong Saudi nationalist, especially against some topics like Iran, with like things like public beheadings. Khashoggi was not a progressive guy. Like, he wasn't in the U. I mean, he was talking about progressive reforms and he was actually praising Mohammed bin Salman when he initially said he was going to bring these reforms. He said it was due. But if you look at some things that he wrote in his entire body of work, this guy is not some, you know, Nelson Mandela type character, somebody who's been fighting for progress his entire career. He's a Saudi yuppie who got whacked for something, whether it's something that he knew, something that he said, somebody who he supported in the big purge last year. It could have been any number of things. So that's what I meant when I said don't jump to conclusions. He's not just some random dissident that they're trying to make an example with. He is somebody who's very interconnected with the Saudi royal family, who was very close to some members of the royal family that were purged last year, and who's had a lot of experience working with Al-Qaeda. So I'm just saying a lot of these weird things, you'd really have to dive into the evidence and to really figure out what exactly happened. That's what I was trying to say.
That's a fair point. Maybe I mischaracterized you in the beginning.
Yeah, by no means do I think the Saudi, like, I'm not speaking in terms of how Trump essentially sees the situation or how he claims to see the situation, as in, you know, oh, don't jump to conclusions. We're selling a lot of weapons to him.
Well, now, I want to get into that eventually. Yeah, I know
that's the main topic that we really wanted to get into anyway. However,
coming back to it, I think you make a really good point. And the point is that, you know, this guy Khashoggi, you know, it's obviously terrible that he was killed, but I think a lot of people would be surprised to hear, you know, of his connections to the Saudi royal government, or even more heinously, like you make the charge that he was a bin Laden handler in that respect, and how hawkish he was, you know, in his larger body of work. especially in topics of like, you know, against Iran and things like that. So I think that's a lot of context, and you're absolutely right. We can only speculate as to what the reason is that he was murdered. What I'm super interested in is kind of the Saudi reaction, you know, and like how they've handled this whole situation, because, you know, they started off straight up lying. They said, nope, didn't happen. We didn't do it. Fake news. Right. And now they're like, yeah, OK, fine. It happened. But
yeah, we did it.
Yeah. No, no, it's akin to like O.J. Simpson writing a book, If I Did It. It's like and I guess where this gives me so much pause, and you kind of mentioned it briefly earlier, but, you know, it's like the big reason why Trump isn't doing shit about this, and why a lot of Americans are wary about doing anything meaningful about this, is that, you know, we have a huge arms deal with Saudi Arabia, and we're selling them a whole lot of weapons, you know, and that creates jobs. It's absolutely true. You know, I think, you know, the figure that I heard somewhere was like it could create up to 1 million jobs, right? Why would we want to throw away 1 million jobs? I think I saw this one on Reddit, so this isn't original, but a funny joke was like Robert Pattinson, you know, that the televangelist dude, he was saying, you know, we shouldn't do anything about it. Like, why would we tarnish our reputation, our, you know, our way of life, you know, all this other stuff on one guy? And it's like, funny, dude. We're supposed to believe that as Christians, that the one dude, you know, that was killed made or break the whole situation. So I don't know. I thought that was kind of an interesting juxtaposition, but I digress. We're selling them weapons, right? A lot of weapons, good weapons too. I think Trump is on record for saying like, hey, you know, if we don't sell them the weapons, then they'll go to Russia and they'll go to China, and their weapons aren't as good as ours because we got the best in the world, but they'll go and they'll get their weapons, you know? And my charge is like, go for it, bro. If our weapons are that good, like, why should we give these bullies our weapons? Why are we giving them the most expensive and potentially the most advanced fighter ever created? I just don't understand it. Why are we arming the bullies? And I'm sounding like such a liberal here, but it just doesn't make sense.
I don't think that's a liberal statement. I think that's honestly the majority. I think most conservatives I speak to as well feel almost, you know, feel the same way. I think there's actually some unity between Democrats and Republicans. Finally. On the same issue.
Finally, I think something we can agree on.
more and more that we've, you know, people really haven't been following the story in Yemen over the past 3 years. It's really only been coming to light for the majority of the public and how horrible the war in Yemen has been, not just in terms of, you know, Saudi bombing raids, but as far as just the blockades and all the starvation that's going on in Yemen, as well as the cholera that's broken out, and how last time I checked, there was about 70% of all the foreign aid imports are coming into one port. And it's an absolute humanitarian crisis.
It's a quagmire now, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think most, I can't find somebody to morally agree that it's actually a good thing to, like, it's morally right to arm the Saudis. You know, it's really kind of funny because, you know, Trump's like, we can't not sell. Yeah, I know these guys are bad, but they're buying weapons from us.
The customer is always right, right? The customer is always right. No, yeah, I mean, exactly. I get it.
The customer is always right. That's perfect.
Yeah. I mean, the argument on that other side is that, okay, there is obvious economic advantage for us. And, you know, when it comes down to it, yeah, maybe it's possible that we would lose a lot of jobs if we soured a deal with Saudi Arabia. But I will say this, of that, what, like something like 400 million billion in arms sales, it's not all committed. And a lot of it is from previous administrations. Like, these are deals that were struck in the Obama administration. So this isn't new money. This is money that we already set up. And to be honest, I think it's something like only 4% of it is like signed off for. The rest of it is still up in the air. That's the estimation.
Yeah.
That's the estimation of how much we will make. So we're not even saying we have their signature. They cut us the check already. We're in production and we'd lose a million jobs. No, the issue is that we would lose potential new jobs that would be created once that money comes in and once the checks are signed and we cash them. Like, so that's like if we really want to be critical about it, yeah, it would suck to lose a lot of jobs and it'd be bad for the economy, but those don't exist yet. Why don't we focus our directives in trying to create jobs that aren't building weapons for human rights violators?
And you actually hit on a really good point right there. That is true that the word or the quote that's being said is or thrown out there is a $110 billion arms deal. There's no signed contract for $100 billion from Saudi Arabia to
right. You know, sorry, US I said 400 billion.
It's not that at all. That is an estimate. And most people don't know that. So I'm really glad you actually brought that up. But I guess this leads into our main topic, the F-35 plane. Where does that fit into this whole quagmire? Our newest, our most expensive. It's at this point, it's our most expensive military project ever, right?
Yeah, it's the most expensive military thing, period, in the history of everything. Yeah, so it fits in because the Saudis are buying a bunch of them. I actually forget how many. I think it's 24. But they're buying a lot of them. And I'll definitely bring this up a little bit later when we talk more about like warplanes in general, but I find it kind of crazy that we're selling our dopest technology to anyone. Well, pretty much anyone who's willing to buy it. And that the driving economical plan or strategy is just like sell this shit to everyone, you know, like I don't know. Whatever happened in keeping a tactical advantage over everyone. I don't know. That's personal opinion. Anyway, how it fits in is that we're selling them a bunch of them. A whole lot of them. And the F-35, like I originally wanted to do a show on like the history of warplanes, and maybe we'll actually do one. But after looking into this F-35 situation, it's so interesting and so fucked up and so cool. Like, I just had to focus on just the current gen of fighters that we have available. I definitely want to talk a lot about the F-35 because I think it's super interesting. But I also want to talk a lot about some other warplanes as well that are currently like flying around right now. But yeah,
what are the the jet fighters that are currently in service right now? Because I don't think most people know.
Yep, I think we're. So the generation conventions are really weird. It like depends on where you're reading them. So we're in, depending on where you look, we're in the fifth generation, but there are a lot of, like, for example, Air Force Magazine has us up to 4++, and then F-35 and F-22 are both in the generation 5. But like most of the planes that are out there and flying around and being used right now actively are either somewhere between 4 and 5, generation 4 and 5. And they're categorized sometimes by like the years that they came out. They're categorized sometimes by like what technology they utilize. And sometimes they're categorized just by, that's pretty much it. I don't know. Would it be helpful for me to talk about like generations of fighters and like how they?
No, definitely. Most people don't. I don't think most people understand that. I mean, I don't really understand how the generation system works. I know that's like a major way that they classify jet fighters. I really don't know anything about. I mean, I really know next to nothing about planes in general. I'm not smart. I'm not a smart guy.
I'm not smart.
However, I know that like the fourth generation planes, they began in like the 70s. Correct me if I'm wrong. Like that's when they started going into service. And like the first couple of fourth generation ones were like the F-15 Eagle and the F-16 Fighting Falcon and mm-hmm. then the F-A-18 Hornet. Which one was the one that Tom Cruise, do you know which one Tom Cruise?
I think it was the Tomcat.
Yeah, the Tom.
Yeah, I don't remember the model number, but it's I think it was F-14. I could be wrong about that. don't quote me. So you're right, and it just depends on what you're looking at. So when I'm looking at the dates, there's an aerospace web kind of classification. So first gen is pretty much 1945 to 55, right?
That's like the shit they were making in World War II, right? Like right, the first generation planes are the stuff that the Germans were making, and
like
and
the MiG, the British. Like the Russian MiG-15 or the American F-86, or you know, things like that. There's piston engine fighters, right? And the thrust, maybe a couple of like early jet engines, but definitely all subsonic, meaning they fly slower than the speed of sound. And like no radars and just all conventional like armaments, things like guns, bombs, dumb rockets, you know, things like that. After that, it's like 55 to 60. And that's kind of when supersonic comes into play, right? So again, supersonic meaning the planes fly faster than the speed of sound. That's where we get the Mach, you know, Mach 1, Mach 2, Mach 3.
I thought it was a razor blade.
Well, it is. But when you're shaving, they move faster than the speed of sound, depending on how many blades you have, right? But this episode is brought to you by Gillette Mach 5. Psych. But
Gillette, we would definitely take you as a sponsor.
Oh, no, seriously.
If you're listening.
If you want to give us some money, that'd be great.
You can get an ad spot right after Butt Scratcher. But continue.
So supersonic comes into play, Gen 2. That's when the first air-to-air missiles come out, which is pretty exciting. Full disclosure, war is bad and killing is bad, but it's pretty badass that they created these air-to-air missiles. Like Mirage 3s from Dassault, the French ones, MiG-21s and 19s are in there, F-102 through 106, American-made ones. Those are the planes. Gen 3, this is when like multi-purpose fighter bombers come out, right? So rather than just an airplane fighting an airplane, this is when, you know, an airplane could fight another airplane, but also maybe bomb a bunker, but also maybe hit a ship, you know, like a bunch of like multi-purpose fighters come out into play there. That's, you know, F4, F5, F8 for the US, MiG-23, MiG-25, MiG-27s. But it's also when the Sukhois come out. And I want to talk about the Sukhois because these are just badass airplanes from the Russians. The Mirage 2000 comes out around there as well. So Gen 4, and that now we're kind of like in the range of where we're starting.
Yeah, like the old, because like the F, I'm sorry if I interrupted you, but like the F, like the planes that we built in the 70s, like right. I guess that's the beginning of Gen 4.
Right.
They're still in service.
Yeah, like a lot
for
of them.
The most part, yeah. They're still in service.
Yeah, a lot of them. So we're talking about this is when they start emphasizing maneuverability over speed, right? So like they were like, okay, cool, we can fly faster than the speed of sound. What's, you know, what else can you do? So that's when they start using a lot of interesting ways of thrust, like how to position the thrusters in the planes to make them move faster, and how to they've really figured out like the thrust to weight ratios to make them just like make them be able to turn on a dime, basically. So F4, F5, F8, I was saying before, excuse me, F14, F15, F16, and FA-18, and that's the multi-role there from the U.S. MiG-29 and MiG-31 is there, but also the Sukhoi, like the Sukhoi line comes out, this Su-27 and the Su-33s. Those are some pretty badass fighters, and they kind of built the platform, like the platform for the most current ones there. But there's a bunch of other ones, like the Japanese-made Mitsubishi F2 is up there, and I think I mentioned Mirage 2000, one generation two earlier, but that one came out at the same time. Chinese jet Chengdu J-10, that's also in the fourth generation. That's when they started really making planes to start fighting. Okay, so this is aerospace web again. So this might be like Gen 4 plus or Gen 4 plus plus. It really just depends on what you're looking at, but that's when we start going for, okay, it's super maneuverable. It's got like Doppler radar, so you can spot other planes everywhere, and or like sensor fusion. And I'll talk about that a little bit later, but it's basically like here's your radar, here's your infrared, here's your other things, and just combine them all together. So that's when Eurofighter Typhoon comes out, the SU-30, the Rafale, F-18s, all the badass planes. But then the 4++, this gets super weird. I hope I'm not boring you. but that's when they start touching on like stealth tech. The SU-35, which I really want to talk about, is on there. The F-15 Silent Eagle is on there, which is just like a F-15 remake with some stealth technology. But you're absolutely right when you said like Gen 4 is when we started building these dope ass planes that are still in service today and that are being like re-winged or re-electronic'd to still fly around and fight now.
Yeah, and like so a project like the F-35 right now, it's obviously it's a polarizing topic, to say the least. The F-35, you know, a lot of people are just like, what are we doing right now? It seems almost like a boondoggle. Like the project started back in the 90s, right? There was like a big, yep. There was like a big bid from, I believe, the Air Force. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Okay. Actually, this is much more interesting than just the Air Force. So,
okay.
So we've got a ton of different planes, and they all do like very specific things. And as the gens have been going on, they've been reducing the number of airplanes that do different things. Like before, you would need like the one airplane that could fit on an aircraft carrier. You know, I forget exactly which models of those, the F-15s, I believe, or I could be wrong. You know, you got the Marines who wanted, Harrier jets. So a Harrier is an airplane that can literally take off and land vertically like a fucking helicopter. But it's got like this like internal engine in the middle and it's just like floats. It's weird, dude. It's super weird. But they needed that for like, you know, specific situations that the Marines needed. And then, you know, we also got like the Air Force wanting like a plane to have like air superiority, right? Like something that could dogfight, something that could sense you out, like pick up on other airplanes from really, really far away. So we've got three different giant branches of the military, the Air Force, the Marines, and the Navy, all wanting different things. But they somehow came up with the genius idea to make a joint strike fighter. And that was in the 90s. So they started planning that in the 90s. And they were all like, yeah, let's do this. They brought it to Congress. Congress loved the idea. And they picked Lockheed Martin to work on this project. And Lockheed Martin made a lot of big claims, right? So one of the big claims that they said was, all right, cool. Since we have one airplane instead of five airplanes, the parts will all be interchangeable. So it'll be more economic, right? So like, let's say I need a fuselage for this jet, right? I could be like, hey, Marines, could I get a fuselage, right? Or we might just be able to make a bunch of fuselages and it'll fit on whichever plane needs it, right? So it's economic. It's like, you know, sharing parts. It's good. And they said that they would try to get it to 80% parts compatibility. And right now the studies are looking like they're only at about 25% part compatibility. Which
So what is that? So what does that mean? Compatibility, parts compatibility. You mean like different parts won't work with different planes?
That's right. That's right. So like imagine having like a Honda Civic, right? Honda Civics are notoriously like famous for being stolen in the US because so many people have them and the parts are so ubiquitous and you can sell those parts on the black market if you steal a Honda, right? So like if you got one Honda Civic, these parts are going to fit for a lot of different Honda Civics in a lot of different years, you know, across a lot of different spectrums, as opposed to like different cars that maybe you can't actually change them, right? So the tires might be different. The rims might be different. The fucking fenders might be different. Like everything is different. So when I say part compatibility, I mean either electronics or like I'm pretty sure the big components like fuselages are compatible with one another, with the exception of course of the variant of the F-35 that has foldable wings. There's the F-35 is actually three different planes, not one, which is the first kind of lie. there are three variants: the A, B, and
C. There's like an A, B, and C, right?
Right. Yeah. A, B, and a C, and I forget which one's which, but the one for the Air Force is just like all the best, like air-to-air tech. The one for the Navy has the capability of taking off on a aircraft carrier and has folded tip wings.
And the one that's for the Marines is has a Harrier like system where it could land vertically, but I don't think it can take off vertically. So crazy shit. So they got three complete similar ish planes, but most of the components that go in there, like 80% of the components, don't work with each other. So the economic idea of let's make one plane that we can switch parts out of, you know, across the board, you know, I guess a better analogy would be like the difference between iOS and Android, right? So like if I have a iOS phone or whatever, all the apps, all the ecosystem, all the plugs, everything like that is all the same, as opposed to if you're on an Android, like I might have a USB-C charger or I might have a micro USB charger. Who knows, right? Those things can't be compatible with one another, you know? So I digress. Does that kind of answer your question on what part compatibility means?
Yeah, it sounds exactly like how Apple changes its charger every single fucking year to make you have to buy a new charger. That's what it sounds like.
Well, get ready because they're probably going to move their newest iPad onto the USB-C connection, which is pretty standard now on Android. But it'll make it like the first time that they'll have a wire that'll work for both Android and iOS. So I can't wait. Unity, man.
Listen, I'm no expert on planes at all. However, like when I hear about the stories about the F-35 right now and all the issues and how expensive it is, just looking at like in an economic sense, mm-hmm. and looking at the spreadsheet, like if someone showed me like, oh, this is what you're buying, the F-35, it's been, you know, however many years since we've been working on this project, and it's estimated to cost, you know, trillions of dollars. It's the most expensive project from the military project of all time. I would shit my pants. I would say, are you fucking kidding me? What the hell is this? And it's like, I heard about stories about how like the planes are falling out of the sky and stuff, and there's all sorts of issues,
and they're getting, you know, the whole thing with, they're getting whipped in simulations too, even from like older gen fighters. And it's fucking crazy. I'll stick up for the F-35 in a bit, but let's shit on them some more for a second.
It sounds like when you want to criticize, when you are taking a hit or taking a shot at the military industrial complex, the MIC, oh boy, Alex Jones territory. when you want to, it's like a classic example that, you know, a lot of libertarians are going to use as what's wrong with the military industrial complex. They're not necessarily trying to make the best military technology. They're more so trying to make the most expensive military technology.
It's a good point. And I'm glad you brought that up.
That's what it sounds like to me, just looking at it, because it almost sounds like a Bowflex, like the Bowflex.
Yes. Yeah, it's like the one home gym, and it folds up and it's supposed to replace all the other gyms, but it's god awful expensive and it doesn't really work that well.
It's like you can do one thing really well or a couple things really well, but doing everything really well, it sounds like a plane that specializes in one thing is going to whip it whenever it has a chance in like a simulation or an actual competition. Right. I mean, go on to the point that you were going to say.
No. I think you brought up a really good point. It's like, I think Lockheed Martin just like sold the shit out of them, out of the US, out of all of us, really, because we're taxpayers are paying for the shit. I mean, you and I were both in sales, and you and I both remember how it's sometimes, you know, a thing that salespeople will oversell a product, right? So I already talked about part compatibility, right? So we already know that the parts don't actually, you know, line up for all the different models, and that sucks. Another thing that they said was that the per flight hour cost, like the cost to operate these things, would be less than older generation models. And actually, they're twice as expensive. So I think it's like the F-15 costs like $16,000 per flight hour to maintain, whereas the F-35 is right now like a $20,000 per flight hour cost. The life cycle cost, meaning like how much it would cost to maintain over the, I don't know, 20, 30 years that they'd be in service, is way, way higher than the life cycle costs now of fighters that we were using, that we still use to a certain capacity from like the 70s, you know? And the big one is how they politically engineered this thing to not be able to fail. And by failure, I mean they pull the plug on the program. I don't mean like failure as in the plane isn't good, because some people might argue that the plane is a failure. So what Lockheed Martin did is they actually set up their manufacturing for this plane across 47 states and 9 countries. I'm going to say that again, 47 states, 9 different countries. And they didn't do this for some, like, you know, economic reason. Like, it was it's cheaper to build, you know, F-35 tires in Florida, and it's cheaper to build the engines in Texas. No, that's not the case. They did this on purpose because politically, you don't want to be the senator that says, I want to kill this deal. It's costing way too much money, because you'd be sacrificing actual jobs in your own state. So imagine 47 states. That is the overwhelming majority of senators. And it's also in 9 countries. So it's like, you know, Trump being like, oh, we can't cross the Saudis because we have this business relationship with them. Imagine if we pull the plug in those 9 other countries that were contracted to do all this work. Like, they're not going to be very happy either. So it's both domestic and international interests are aligned in. And I might also add 3 major military branches, all aligned to get this one fighter made, regardless of how expensive it is, regardless of how well it turns out. Like, that's the political and economic, like, underpinning. I should say overpinning, because this is literally the only reason why it still exists.
Well, all right. So you said it's getting whipped in simulations. So, like, by older models,
yeah,
by
older birds, like F-15s are whipping it. I mean, you mentioned, like, some of them are falling out of the sky due to, like, avionics issues. But I digress. Yeah, they're not faster than other planes. Definitely not faster than some of these Russian planes, like the Sukhoi Su-35 or 57, for that matter. They're not faster. They're not more maneuverable. They're heavier. Where they have the most advantage, and this is where I'll start to kind of back them up, is in this ridiculous technology. Their computational ability is ridiculous. Their stealth is ridiculous.
What does computational mean?
Okay.
Because I have no idea what that means.
Yeah, no. So think about, like, the difference between the first generation of iPhone and the current, like, iPhone XS Max that we have, right?
Like, yeah.
You think about the processing power. Think about the amount of things that it can do. Think about.
Okay. I get you.
Like, it's like, so another thing that a lot of people are upset about is that this F-35 plane has a helmet, and it's the dopest, craziest, awesomest tech. But this helmet uses a thing called sensor fusion, right? And it basically makes an augmented reality look. Like, there's no dashboard. It's all in the helmet, right? And they can actually look through their plane. Like, if the person's below you, if the enemy jet is below you, you can look down and you can see the jet, even though you're looking at probably your lap, because it overlays that reality over the real reality. That's what's called augmented reality. Thing cost $500,000, by the way. the helmet. But they're so dope. So these things. All right, so let's talk about stealth for a second. So the stealth is just unparalleled. One of the best fighters out there right now, arguably, is.
And let's be clear. Let's be clear about what stealth is. I think a lot of people, when you say the word stealth plane, they imagine a cloaking device.
Well, it's like an electronic cloaking device. Let's put it that way. So, like, if you can look up and in the sky and it's flying at an altitude that the human eye can see, you can still absolutely see it with your eyeballs. But if it's moving fast enough or high enough, you're not going to see it with your eyes, and you're certainly not going to see it on radar because of what's called a radar cross section, right? And that's the little blip that would pop up on a radar, you know, like you might have seen, like, a bunch of, like, old movies where, you know, they're like, oh, we've got an incoming bogey, and there's, like, a little blip on the radar. Well, the cross section of an awesome jet called the Sukhoi Su-37 is like the size of a bed, right? Or like a dinner table or something like that, right? It's like 1.5 meters, right? The cross section of the F-35 from all angles is like the size of an insect. So when it's like the difference of seeing, like, an insect on the radar or like a table flying around in the air. You're obviously going to pick out the table well before you pick out the insect. You're probably never going to pick up the insect. It is so stealthy, meaning that the radar systems that we currently employ all over the world to detect aerial threats just cannot see it.
Sounds like a, I don't know, stealth technology sounds almost, I don't know. I'm not smart enough to get it, maybe. I don't like saying that, but it sounds made up to me, stealth. When you say like stealth technology, all this has like stealth RCS, you know, 0.004. I feel like it's just like a word that I feel like it's like a, like almost like a made up, like gym term, like this has this much protein synthesis or stuff like that. I don't know. That's just me being like a very big skeptic.
So I'm sure
you've
played like Battleship before, right?
Like the board game?
Yeah, the board game, right. And you know that there was that little like Corvette, the little tiny one that was just like two pegs big,
yeah.
Right?
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
Right? So on Battleship, it's like a little radar, right? And like that's the idea of the game, right? And obviously the big battleship, like the aircraft carrier, you'll probably get a hit on it. Like you're more likely to get a hit on the aircraft carrier than you are on that tiny little Corvette, right? So when we talk about stealth, we're talking about something that you know, really stealthy planes will show up on the radar as this little tiny thing, right? And the F-35 is almost invisible. Like you cannot see it. So it's like
Have they compared it to like the S-300 or the S-400? Like,
yeah.
What does the simulation say on that?
For everybody that's listening, S-300 and S-400, he's referring to a land-based anti-aerial rocket like system. It's basically a giant ass truck that the Russians made, and on top of the truck is like a missile launcher. And the purposes that they use it for is to like knock out ballistic missiles from the sky, knock out, you know, satellites. They want to use them to knock out like, you know, aircraft carriers, for example, or like other ships, but also knock out airplanes. And these things fly at like the rockets that they shoot fly at Mach 5, meaning 5 times the speed of sound. That's way, 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 way faster than even the fastest like jets that we employ right now. So the way that they work is that they need very sensitive radar systems. They need very sensitive guidance systems, and they do have those guidance systems. Now, the S-400, definitely the S-300, they're not going to see this plane. They're just not going to see it. However, the new S-500 will, or at least a lot of people seem to think that it will. So this is the newest generation of rocket launcher that the Russians have, and it has a beast of a rocket on it. And it's got some pretty sensitive sensors. Now, the F-35 also has these like active countermeasures, and this is where that like computational power comes in. It can jam the signal or like make it look like there's 2 or 5 planes on the thing. You know, do a lot of fucked up things to your electronics. It's like hacking in the sky, right? But this S-500 is evidently has a lot of countermeasures for that, so it's harder to hack the systems. To put it in a crude way, I don't think any plane is going to be very good against the S-500, and that might be a game changer.
And I guess how it relates to what's going on today, it's in terms of like geopolitics. Syria has been given S-300s or S-400s. I'm not sure.
I think they gave them S-400s, but I mean.
S-400s.
Yeah,
they gave them S-400s. So Russia gave Syria S-400s. I mean, essentially, as a show to keep Israel from bombing them. Right now, like I believe Israel, they're the primary country that has the F-35s in service. If I'm correct,
in service, right? Yeah, in service, right? But that'll change. That'll change after Saudi Arabia gets their hands on them, and even Belgium has like a bunch of them. And Japan wanted.
Belgium just signed a deal with Lockheed Martin. They're buying a contract. I'm not sure. I didn't really look that far into it, but I guess I know that they were using the Typhoon before, and now they're going to the F-35.
Oh, the Typhoon is such a good plane, though. And so trying to wrap all this together. I think that what's the angle behind the F-35 is to make a multi-role plane, right? One plane that does a bunch of shit and has the best technology inside of it, because frankly, dogfighting doesn't happen anymore, right? You're not fighting plane to plane anymore. However, what makes me nervous is that they're losing a lot of the capability of dogfighting. And it's like, well, you know, war is crazy as shit. What happens if just randomly you're up against a Sukhoi S-35 or 57, and those planes can do these planes have these like thrust vectoring. And I'll explain that. It's the jet engines that, you know, push the flames out of the back. They move independently of one another, and they can move up, down, left, right. Like, if you're listening to this, just go on YouTube and look for Sukhoi SU-35 or SU-57 aerial examples. This thing does backflips in the sky. Like, it's weird. It looks like it defies gravity. If you were ever in a dogfight with this thing, it's especially in an F-35, it's a lot faster. It's a lot more agile. It's a lot less stealthy. But if for whatever reason you end up in a dogfight with them, that like F-35 is gonna lose. But again, back to that major strategy, it's like the U.S. firmly believes that we're just not going to be dogfighting anymore, that we're just really going to be fighting from a distance, that we're going to use beyond visual range anti-air missiles. So meaning you shoot a missile 180 miles away from the target.
You know, it seems like, I don't know, like it is... Here's an open question. I don't know the answer to this as well. And I'm sure anyone who's like, you know, really, really into military technology will probably have a better, you know, ear to the ground on this. And this is not just for the future. I mean, over the past like 50 years, 60 years, even, what military technology has been more advanced? The Soviet Union / Russia or the United States? Like, what country has produced better military technology? I don't know. And I'm asking you, like, what's your opinion on that?
I mean, the U.S. hands down. But again, it's I think unfair to ask the question so broadly, because it really just depends on application, right? So yeah, we outspend every military on the planet 10 times over, you know? Certainly a lot more than Russia.
That just means you're spending a lot. You have the most expensive military technology.
Right, there's nothing, you know, don't bat an eye at that, dude. It's like we have the best everything, period. We have the biggest aircraft carriers. We have the best, you know, stealth technology. We have the best planes in certain respects. We have the best... the best fucking everything, you know, like the best tanks, the best armored personnel carriers, you know, like you name it, we have the best ones of that. Now, it depends on the situation, though, because like a lot of people might not know, but we have fewer nukes than Russia does, like a lot fewer. They have bigger nukes than we do. So if we're like just talking about like, hey, let's have a nuclear dick swinging contest, Russia might win that one. I mean, we have enough bombs between the two of us to blow the whole world up, you know, 100 times over. But
I think it's like, you know, if you both have a shotgun and you blow each other in the face from, you know, 5 feet away,
right? Like you're both guaranteed to die.
What caliber of shotgun you have, exactly. you're going to die anyway.
But if you're measuring them, Russia's got the bigger shotgun, you know? So if we're talking about that, that's crazy. Again, we were talking about the S-500, this new, you know, missile launcher, like ground-based missile launcher. That shit is really dope, and I think that kind of plays into, you know, the agreement that Trump wants to pull out of the multinational agreement about you know, creating and developing these missile launchers, because I think the S-500 might be in direct direct defiance of said international treaties of like not developing these ridiculous ballistic missiles. Yeah, we don't have anything like that, but we might not need anything like that, right? So that's the kind of the point, you know.
We have the Patriot missile. That's like the closest thing, right?
Yeah, but we might not need missile launchers, you know. Like for all we know, the next step is we have a swarm of tiny drones that fly through the air, and like, yeah, cool, you have a dope ass missile launcher, but we have 1,000 drone. Like, it'd be like Bat Bomb's 21st century, you know? Like,
oh God.
You like that might not even be relevant. But I definitely think that the S-5500 presents a really big problem for the F-35 because, you know, it sees it from farther away. It has really good countermeasures, and it the missile flies a hell of a lot faster than the F-35. So here's something that I did want to talk about. So we're selling our allegedly dopest plane, most expensive plane to like everyone, right? And I'm kind of thinking that the reason why we do that is because we want to cover the costs of the goddamn plane. But you know what plane we're not selling to everybody? The F-22. And Japan really wants it because Japan doesn't need a multi-role strike fighter like the F-35. Japan needs air superiority because China and Russia keep flying Sukhoi, Su-35s and 57s all over their airspace. Well, maybe not in their airspace, but like around it. And like basically bothering them and flexing their muscles around them. And Japan just really wants a dope air-to-air fighter. But we don't sell the F-22s, which makes me believe that maybe the F-22s is better than the F-35.
They just recently went into service, right? They wanted the service. The F-22 went into service in what, like 2004?
Yeah, they're really recent. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And isn't like the speed on that like classified and stuff? Like, don't we?
Well,
like,
the top speeds are always technically classified, but they have like really good projections on them. Like, it's not hard to figure out based on the components that they have in them and the weights and, you know, just physics. So I think most people can math it out. They're really fast. They're not faster than the Sukhoi 57s, though. I had this information up. Let's find out. So as far as the F-22s, so F-22 is actually faster now than I misspoke. 1,500 miles per hour with a 1,480-mile range and goes about 65,000 feet high, whereas the Su-57 has 1,320 miles per hour, like maximum. So we're talking about like almost 200 miles per hour faster F-22, alleged top speed. It might go faster than that. But really where the Su-57 beats the F-22 is the thrust vectoring, man. Like, F-22 does have thrust vectoring, meaning that, again, it like moves the nozzles on the back so that it can turn faster and do crazy shit. But the Su-57 and the Su-35, they do backflips. It's fucking crazy. They like defy physics. So in a man-to-man like gunfight, like, these things are crazy. But the F-22s also have like mad good stealth tech. Again, I know that it's like kind of like a magic mystery for you, but it, like, stealth really matters, especially in the sky. Because if you can avoid the dogfight, if you can see first, they have a saying. It's like, first look, first shot.
First look for that makes sense to me. That's crazy, man. What does China have? Do you know?
So they have these Chengdu planes. They're not great. I know that China is buying mad Su-57s and Su-35s from Russia. Like, a bunch of people have been interested, like the BRICS countries, like Brazil and South Africa and shit like that. They've all been interested in it, but nobody's ponied up the money except for China. They actually put down some money for those Sukhoi fighters. And, you know, as I say, you know, you want to see what's next up in the world? Like, look at China. China's really forward thinking. And I think they, you know, we're definitely not selling China any F-35s. But with our president, I wouldn't doubt it if we did.
China.
We're going to sell China some F-35s. They're going to have to pay more.
You know what? They said they wanted an F-35. You know what I said, China? I can't even do a Trump impression right now. I think this is a good point to actually wrap this thing up. Because we can go on about – I mean, I could talk about these planes – I can't talk about these planes, but I could hear about these planes all day. It's so interesting to me. It's so interesting to me that the planes that we made in the 70s are still in service, and how these newer planes, the F-35 A, B, and C, or what, the C's not out right yet, but whatever, I digress, are losing in simulations and stuff. It's just like an interesting topic matter.
It just really depends on how you slice it, man. A one-to-one dogfight, like, they probably suck, like, pretty bad. But, you know, the way that war is going, like, we're probably never going to have to get into dogfights again. Like, we're just going to use technology and shit like that. I guess.
Well, let's hope that we don't get in the war in general.
Yeah. Don't get high on your own supply, right?
Yeah, don't get high on your own supply. Let's just hope that there is no war. I was going to say something fucked up. Oh, I messed up, man. I haven't cursed the entire episode, and I just did.
Is that something?
I don't think I've cursed the entire episode.
You've been actively like trying not to do.
No, actually, not at all. But I was thinking in my head, I haven't said anything bad this episode, so I felt like it would have been. It's a great episode to showcase to people who are looking for clean.
Not.
Christian conservative. I don't think Christians are
gonna like it. I cursed a lot, so.
Yeah, oh, you cursed a lot? I usually pay. I mean, I don't. When I say cursing, I don't mean cursing as in like saying fuck, shit, bitch. I mean saying like just outlandish stuff. Like if you listen to the last episode, it gets pretty dicey at the end. It gets pretty dicey.
Every time I leave you alone, some new shit happens that
every single time I'm left alone on this podcast for the audience, like it's I don't know. I'm still learning how to control a show by myself, but it usually gets off the fucking rocker. Like, we'll be talking about something serious at first, and then it will straight up just go into a Howard Stern episode. Like, I swear to God, there'll be midgets who are, there's midget strippers. We have, we have like these crazy characters. We have phone pranks. No, I'm joking. We don't do any of that. But we just talk about crazy, outlandish stuff sometimes. But in the name of good, funny stuff, in the name of good
content.
Give the
people what they want.
We want more tits.
All right, let's end it there.
All right, peace, everyone.